Write down three components and functions of the juxtaglomerular apparatus. List five hormones produced by the kidney. Explain the mechanism of glucose and amino acid reabsorption in the proximal convoluted tubule. Give four factors that will necessitate the release of renin from the juxtaglomerular apparatus. Why would an albumin molecule not pass through the glomerular capillary membrane are all the common questions that you're going to be asked by your lecturers in your professional examination. So, listen all the way through to get these answers. What is up, beautiful people? It's your girl Oge and happy 2021. Welcome back to the Simply Vet podcast, where we are all about personal professional exams, learning the skills to becoming a good vet, and earning a living in the veterinary profession. So, come hang out with me each week for stuffs like this. In today's episode, we are going to be looking at the renal physiology, and by this we mean the physiology of urine formation in the nephron, and we're going to look at how the kidney produces urine, its functions, and other things that are related to how the urine is preformed in the body to the kidney. So stay tight, and there are some key things I want you to take note of while listening to this audio. And the first one is that the physiology of renin formation in the nephron is to modify the composition of the plasma, and in doing so, it produces urine. So that is the blueprint of it all. Once you have this in your mind, you're all set. And another one is that the principal task of the nephron is to balance plasma to homeostatic set point, okay, and thus excrete potential toxins in the urine. And the way they keep the nephron does this is in three ways: one, filtration; two, reabsorption; and three, secretion. So with this said, we are all set and good to go. Okay, so under tubular reabsorption, we are going to be looking at how the solutes are being recovered in one, in the PCT, that is proximal convoluted tubule, LOH, loop of Henle, DCT, distal convoluted tubule, and CD, which is collecting duct. And it is good to know that these various portions of the nephron in the kidney, they differ in their capacity to reabsorb water and specific solutes. And the amount of water that is being reabsorbed or that is lost in this nephron, in these portions of the nephron, are tightly regulated directly by ADH, that is antidiuretic hormone, and aldosterone, and is indirectly regulated by renin. So we quickly look into this segment one after the other. And the first one I'm starting with is reabsorption in the PCT, that is the proximal convoluted tubule. And there's some of the characteristics, so let's get into it. The PCT microscopically is a tortoise part with simple cuboidal cells and prominent microvilli that allows for maximum reabsorption and secretion of solutes such as sodium ion, chloride ion, glucose, to mention but a few. And in this PCT, it actively transports these ions and cross membranes so that they have high concentration of mitochondria. Okay, so it is mitochondria that makes them actively transport ions. Okay, and again, it is good to know that sodium ion is the main cation that is being reabsorbed by active transport. Calcium ion is being reabsorbed by the action of calcium ATPase pump, and water is being reabsorbed by the action of osmosis. Okay, other solutes like glucose, ammonium, proteins, vitamins, they are all co-transported by sodium ion by bulk flow into the peritubular capillary. Okay, so I hope all this is not really confusing. I also got to know that small amount of large molecules like hormones and drugs that are filtered, they are reabsorbed by the cell of the luminal brush border by endocytosis, that is a type of active transport. So in essence, guys, in the PCT, over 65% of the filtered substances are reabsorbed along the PCT of the nephron. So I hope you get this. Okay, let's move on into reabsorption in the LOH, that is the loop of Henle. And microscopically, it has descending and ascending portions that runs adjacent and parallel to each other, and they make a hairpin turn at the deepest point of that descent. And this, the descending portion of the LOH consists of a thick portion and a long portion, while the ascending part of the LOH also consists of a thick portion and a thin portion. So you must have heard of the ascending limb of the loop of Henle, descending limb of the loop of Henle. That is just what we are trying to say. And it is good to also know that in the LOH, the different portions of the loop also have different permeabilities to solutes and water. For example, water secretion occurs in all parts of the nephron, okay, in general, except in the thin limb of the loop of Henle. Also, the thin ascending limb of the loop of Henle is impermeable to water, and it's very important when diluting urine, when the kidney is trying to dilute urine. Okay. Thirdly, the thick ascending limb also has the same structure as proximal convoluted tubule, so there is active transport of solutes like chlorine, sodium ion in it. Okay, and in the thin descending limb, it is very permeable to water and also solutes. Okay, so in all, in the loop of Henle, all the changes are accomplished by osmosis in the thin descending limb, and active transport occurs in the thick ascending loop of Henle. So about 15-20% of water and 25% of solutes are being filtered and reabsorbed in the loop of Henle. So don't let it be confusing, just take them one after the other. The next segment of the nephron we're going to be looking at is the DCT, that is the distal convoluted tubule. And if you follow this nephron structure well, you will know that it is a continuation of the thick ascending limb of the loop of Henle. So it has the same simple cuboidal epithelium, okay, and it is adjacent to the glomerulus, so it is close to the juxtaglomerular apparatus, that is, the DCT is close to juxtaglomerular apparatus, and it is also a very tortuous segment, just like how proximal convoluted tubule is, but it has shorter and fewer microvilli and mitochondria. And it is good to note that DCT, that is distal convoluted tubule, is referred to as diluting segment of the nephron, and the here is why it is so. One, there is continuous reabsorption of sodium ion and chloride ion, and this helps to lower the osmolarity of the glomerular filtrate. And the second reason why it is referred to as the diluting segment of the nephron is that it is highly impermeable to water and urea. And in general, only about 5% of filtered water is reabsorbed in this DCT. Okay, you are really making progress. Finally, the last portion of the set of nephron is the collecting duct. And there are two parts. One, the cortical collecting duct, and 2, the medullary connecting duct. And we will start with the cortical connecting duct, that is CCD. And there are two class of cells that are present in the cortical connecting duct, and they are the principal cells, that is P cell, and the intercalated cell, that is I cell. And this segment, that is the CCD, is impermeable to urea, but the reabsorption of sodium ion in exchange of potassium secretion is under the influence of aldosterone, and all this occurs in the P cells. While the I cells, they have hydrogen ATPase pump for active secretion of hydrogen ion into the cortical tubule for acidic urea formation. Thus, I cells, they also involved in bicarbonate and potassium reabsorption. And another thing I want you to really note, that in the presence of ADH, that is antidiuretic moon, also known as vasopressin, okay, the P cells will become permeable to water, and this will lead to the concentration, this will lead to the formation of concentrated urine. And the way ADH do it is that it opens the aquaporin to water channels in the P cells. I know all this is really a great thing to just memorize now. All you need now is to jot down what you, the most important things. Okay, let's quickly look into the MCD, that is the medullary collecting duct. And there's just one thing to note about it. It is moderately permeable to urea. Okay, and overall, only about 2 to 10% of filtered water is reabsorbed in this collecting duct, and it ultimately depends on the levels of ADH. So that is it, the different segments of the nephron and how they all differ in reabsorbing solutes back into the body. So guys, let's quickly look into the renin aldosterone angiotensin system, RAS, and the general function of it is to raise the blood pressure. And there are three active organs in the body that senses this low blood pressure, and we have the liver, the kidney, and the heart. So it's going to be a form of storyline, so just get your pen and paper ready and let's get started. Now, in levels of low blood pressure, the liver first produces a plasma protein called angiotensinogen, and this angiotensinogen is in its inactive state. So the kidney, since it has already sensed the low blood pressure and low blood volume, it will then secrete its own substance, that is renin. And it is this renin that will convert that inactive angiotensinogen into the inactive form, which is angiotensin 1. Okay, this angiotensin 1, okay, is partly active. So the heart then secretes an enzyme called angiotensin converting enzyme, ACE. And this ACE is going to convert angiotensin 1 into angiotensin 2, which is then what? Active. And it is this angiotensin 2 that is now going to raise the blood pressure in these three ways. One, it will then constrict the blood vessel, especially the arterioles, and in constricting it, it increases peripheral resistance and it raises blood pressure in terms of hypertension. And it's also important in, once it's been constricted, it will help in auto-regulation of the renal blood flow. Okay? And the second thing the angiotensin 2 is going to do is that it's going to stimulate adrenal cortex to release aldosterone. And we all know what aldosterone does. It causes sodium ion reabsorption in the kidney, and it indirectly increases blood volume and also raises blood pressure. And the third thing angiotensin 2 is going to do is that it's going to stimulate the posterior pituitary gland, that is PPG, to release its hormone ADH, antidiuretic hormone, also known as vasopressin. Okay, and what it's going to do is that it's going to increase water reabsorption in the kidney. And you know, once there's a lot of reabsorption of water in the kidney, it's going to raise the blood volume directly, and thus the blood pressure is also going to be what raised. So that is it, guys. Renin, aldosterone, angiotensin system is a system of renin, aldosterone, and angiotensin, and these three work together in raising blood pressure. Okay. So guys, next up we have is the JGA, that is the juxtaglomerular apparatus. And it is an important structure in the nephron. It is located at the point where the distal convoluted tubule comes in contact with the afferent arteriole. And don't forget, guys, I just want to tell you that even if you don't understand what all these terms is, especially this afferent arteriole, look out for final episode on season 1, as we are going to give close meaning of all of these terms. With that being said, let's get ahead. Now, this juxtaglomerular apparatus contains three specialized cells, okay? And these cells are, one, the macula densa. The second one, which has three names. The second one is the mesangial cell, or you can call it the Lacey's cell, or you could call it the Purkinje's cell. While the third specialized cell is the juxtaglomerular cells. And a lot of examiners like asking this question on what the juxtaglomerular apparatus is, like the three components of it and the function. Now, the whole function of this juxtaglomerular apparatus is to monitor the composition of the fluid in the distal convoluted tubule. It also helps to adjust the glomerular filtration rate, and it also helps to secrete an important hormone called renin, which is very important in the renin, angiotensin, aldosterone system. And we all know what the function of renin is. It helps to monitor the levels of sodium ion in the kidney. So with that being said, let's quickly move on to the next. So guys, just jot this, and if you really want to know more about it, get your good textbooks and link back on them. So these are just a summary of what the juxtaglomerular apparatus is. Let's quickly look into the countercurrent system. Okay, just know that it is a system of vessels that runs parallel to, counter to, and in close proximity with the outflow for some distance. And this system exists only in the excretion of concentrated urine. With that being said, let's then look at how concentrated urine is then excreted from the body. Now, it's good to know that excretion of concentrated urine occurs in the juxtamedullary nephron, and this nephron is a long nephron that is located in the medullary interstitium. Okay, now, two conditions has to be met if concentrated urine is going to be formed in the tubule, and the two conditions are, one, there must be high concentration of ADH, that is antidiuretic hormone, in order to enable water reabsorption at DCT and the CD, that is distal convoluted tubule and the collecting duct. Number two condition that must be met is that there must be increased osmolarity at the interstitium, and it is made possible by this countercurrent system. Okay, we have landed. Now, this countercurrent system is a system of two. Okay, we have the countercurrent multiplier system that occurs at the LOH and the collecting duct, and the countercurrent exchanger system that occurs at the vasa recta. Okay, now what happens at the countercurrent multiplier system is that, one, there is active co-transport of solutes such as sodium, potassium and chlorine. Two, there is active movement of sodium ion, especially by the P cells, that is the principal cells of the DCT and CD, into the medullary interstitium. Three, there is great passive diffusion of large amount of urea from the medullary collecting duct into the medullary interstitium. And four, ADH, that is antidiuretic hormone, presence makes the medullary collecting duct to become permeable to water. These four things are what happens in the countercurrent multiplier system. Okay, now let's quickly look into what happens in the countercurrent exchanger system. And the structure we made mention here was the Vasa recta. And just know that Vasa recta, they are branches of efferent arterioles that extend deep into the medulla and covers or surround the LOH of the nephrons. Okay, good. Now, there are the things that the countercurrent exchanger system do is that, one, it enables the downflow of blood in the descending limb of the Vasa recta. It makes the medullary interstitium hypotonic. Okay, good. And the other thing that it does is that the reverse flow of blood upward in the ascending limb of the Vasa recta. And here, the blood leaves the ascending limb of the Vasa recta into the medullary interstitium. So the two functions are, the downflow of blood makes the medullary interstitium hypotonic. Two, the reverse flow as blood flows upward in the ascending limb of the Vasa recta makes the blood leave the ascending limb and enters into the medullary interstitium. I hope it's not confusing. I'm just trying my possible best to just summarize what this system means. If it's confusing, link back to the textbooks I made mention of and also do further study. Okay? We are going to be looking now into the functions of the kidney, one of which is the excretory function, of which you must have seen how the nephron does it. We have the hormonogenesis function, where it produces some hormones, which we are going to look into. We also have the body fluid pH maintenance. It also, the kidney also function in regulation of the arterial blood pressure. Now, I'm going to be focusing on the hormonogenesis function of the kidney. And the hormones the kidney produces are vitamin D3, erythropoietin, renin, prostaglandins, and bradykinins, based on what we are given in our lecture notes. And I'm going to be focusing on renin. And renin, you could remember when we started, we asked what necessitates the release of renin from the body, from the kidney. And there are conditions. One of the conditions that will necessitate the release of renin is low blood pressure. Another one is low blood volume. Another one is low blood oxygen. And the last one is low blood sodium concentration. That is just four basic conditions that will necessitate the release of renin from the kidney. With that being said, let's move on to the next. So let's quickly look into the glomerulofiltration barrier or the basement membrane. And what this barrier or membrane is that it separates the glomerular capillaries, that is the glomerulus, from the Bowman's capsule, and it helps to permit very rapid movement of filtrate from the capillaries into the capsule. With that being said, it's also good to know that it consists of these four things: one, the capillary endothelium; two, the glomerular basement membrane, also called the basal lamina; three, it consists of the podocytes, also known as the epithelial cells; and four, it consists of satellite stellate cells, also known as macrophages. Now let's quickly look into the function of this constituent of the barrier. Now, the capillary endothelium, from the name, it has fenestrations, that is window openings, of about 70 to 90 nanometer in diameter. Okay, and it helps filtrate to pass from it into the glomerulus. So the capillary endothelium serves as a window, an opening of fenestration into the next constituent, which is the glomerular basement membrane. And this membrane restricts plasma proteins such as albumin from getting into the glomerular filtrate because of its large size and the positive charge that albumin is carrying. So this membrane is selectively permeable to only constituent proteins with negative charge. So, and this answers the third question we threw out in the beginning of this episode of why albumin would not pass through the capillary membrane, and this explains it all because of its large charge and its positive charge. Okay, let's quickly look into the epithelial cells. And the epithelial cells, you also said, are also called the podocytes. Okay, they have foot processes, and they interdigitate each other, okay, to form filtration slits. Okay, that's just about the glomerular filtration membrane. So with that being said, let's quickly move on to the next one. Let me quickly explain these two terms: low osmolarity and high osmolarity. Now, low osmolarity simply means less solute and more water, while high osmolarity simply means high solute and less water. And in under the condition of low osmolarity, dilute urine will be produced, and under the conditions of high osmolarity, concentrated urine will be produced by the kidney. With that being said, let's quickly look how the kidney, that is the nephron, helps to produce dilute and concentrated urine. Now, how dilute urine is produced is that it is produced in conditions where the extracellular fluid has low osmolarity, like we said before. And this actually means that there are less solute than there are water in the body. Thus, ADH will not be released, and this will lead to the removal of this excess water by the renal tubules in the urine and help to bring back the body homeostasis to normal. Now, how concentrated urine is produced is that it is produced when the extracellular fluid has high osmolarity, which means that there are more solutes than there are water in the blood. So ADH is going to be released, and it will act on the aquaporin two water channels that is distributed along the walls of the DCT and CD, that is the distal convoluted tubules and the collecting duct. When this happens, it results in highly reabsorption of water packed into the interstitial fluid, then into the blood, and this brings the osmolarity back to normal. Thus, the renal tubule will then secrete less water in the urea, producing a dark, concentrated urine. Okay, I hope this is not confusing. Just listen to it slowly. And if it's still confusing, check out your good textbooks. And the one I'm making reference to is an open stack textbook, Combined Anatomy and Physiology. So go online, it's a free textbook online to download. Open stack, Combined Anatomy and Physiology. You'll be able to see most of what I just explained to you. Okay guys, I'm going to stop here because the audio is really getting longer and I just want it to be an audio summary. So these are the key points you just need to know about the renal physiology. Get them down, then support it with your lecture materials and your good textbooks, okay? And I know that with this summary you can be able to write your exams confidently, because that is just the aim of this podcast. Wishing you well in this year. See you in the next episode. Bye for now.